much thicker.
What are you doing here? He cried in a very gruff voice.
It's the princess! We've found her!
Yes, it's Fairy Tales Reimagined. Each month, celebrated novelist Kate Forsyth is joining us in the Life Matters studio. Kate is, of course, the author of bestsellers like, The Wild Girl and Bitter Greens. Her latest just out is Dancing on Knives. She has a very particular interest in how fairy tales have been reinterpreted throughout the ages, retold, so much so she's been doing a PhD on it all as well. And we're interested in what these retellings can help us understand about ourselves and the human condition. Last month we interpreted that princess doomed to decades, if not centuries, of sleep, and we learnt that Sleeping Beauty had much murkier origins than you might imagine. Today we're putting on our scales and tails, aren't we, Kate Forsyth? Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, actually, you've been at the inaugural Australian Fairy Tale Conference. This happened last week. What happens at a fairy tale conference?
Oh, it was wonderful. You know, we heard stories. We talked about, fairy tales and Australian myth. And there were, people travelled from all over Australia to be there. It was very lively, very, very impassioned. These are people who love fairy tales and find them endlessly fascinating, which I think most people do.
Mm. And that had a very particular Australian spin, didn't it? You were looking, I think, at Rapunzel in the Antipodes.
I was indeed. It's surprising how many Australian writers and creative artists have been fascinated by Rapunzel. And so I was unpacking Rapunzel for the audience and then talking about why. Now, why have so many people been fascinated by this one fairy tale?
Well, people have certainly been fascinated by the fairy tale that we're going to discuss today. Why were you so interested in discussing The Little Mermaid and what it reveals about ourselves?
Well, I think it comes from being a little girl and wishing that I had a tail. And I think I would have particularly
loved... wings.
And wings, exactly. And I think it was because it's always such a mysterious tale. Most people nowadays know The Little Mermaid because of the Disney movie, which is a very cheerful, happy musical and, The Little Mermaid gets her man. Mm. But I grew up on the older tale, the Hans Christian Andersen tale, which is far darker.
Much darker.
Oh, and it's
brutal,
really cruel.
Actually.
It's cruel, yeah. And so I think that for me, I was always torn, or I had this tension between the beauty of the tale and its inherent cruelty and darkness, and it's a tragic tale.
Before we get to Hans, let's go back even further, because people have been imagining beings, half human, half sea creature, for eons. And in fact, you've just got a kid's book out this month, or last month, I think it was, looking at these Selkie tales. What are Selkies?
Well, Selkies come from Irish and Scottish folklore. My grandmother's grandmother grew up on the Black Isle in Scotland, in the Highlands of Scotland, and it's surrounded by water, and they had many, many tales of Selkies who were seals in the water and were in human form on land. So they could shed their seal skin and dance in the moonlight and then pull on their seal skins and dive back into the water. Mm. And there's actually a very old myth that long, long ago, a man fell in love with a Selkie and he took her seal fur and hid it and married her.
So she could never go back
and
become a seal.
So she could never go back. Eventually, her daughter did give her, did find her seal fur and give it back to her, and she escaped away into the water. But that clan was called the McPhees. And, of course, my grandmother's grandmother's mother was a McPhee, so I've got Selkie blood.
What is it about these hybrid kind of watery, earthy identities that are so mystical and wonderful for us?
Well, the sea is like the womb of all creation. It's a symbol of the unconscious. A mermaid or a Selkie, they're symbols of seduction and transformation. Mm. And they tempt people away from the safe land and into the dark and dangerous waters. So, they're also a metaphor for death and rebirth. So, we've had mermaid tales or tales of these, half earth, half sea creatures for thousands and thousands of years, at least 3,000 years, they've been recorded. And I think that they have this kind of allure of the forbidden.
So in 1837, Hans Christian Andersen tells the story of the Little Mermaid. Mm. And actually this, it seems, is actually intensely personal to him. How?
Well, Hans Christian Andersen was a very troubled soul, and his sexuality was very, very troubled as well. He wrote these diaries, and after his death, these diaries were discovered, and it was found out that he had these incredibly intense yearnings, particularly for one of his childhood friends, a young man called Edvard Collin. And when Edvard announced his engagement, Hans Christian Andersen wrote him this letter, which says, "I long for you as though you were a beautiful Calabrian girl. My sentiments for you are those of a woman. The femininity of my nature and our friendship must remain a mystery." And so scholars see this as a declaration of his love for his very beautiful male friend.
And how did his friend?
Well, Edvard, of course, was just about to get married, and Edvard was put off and troubled by these strange yearnings of his friend. He later wrote in his diary, he wrote, "I could not return his feelings, and my rejection caused the author a great deal of anguish." So after his rejection, Hans Christian Andersen wrote The Little Mermaid as a love letter to Edvard. It's a story about a girl who's filled with unrequited longing for someone who does not love her and who marries another. And she makes supreme sacrifices to try and become the sort of person that prince could love. But he does not see her, he does not hear her. And so in the end, she is condemned to death and to annihilation. It's a very sad story.
It's a very sad story. And the girl is no ordinary girl.
No.
Because she's a mermaid.
She's a mermaid.
And she wants to become an earthly being 100% of the time so she can be with her prince.
She has to make a series of terrible sacrifices in order to be with the man that she loves. She goes to the sea witch and she begs the sea witch to take her tail and give her legs like a human, so she can walk among, you know, on the land. And the sea witch says to her, "It is very foolish of you. It will bring you to grief. You want to get rid of your fish tail and walk about on two stumps. You know, every step you will take will feel as if you were stepping on the blades of knives."
Oh. But then she does something. There's another story where an older woman in a fairy tale does something horrendous to a younger woman. What does a sea witch do?
Well, the sea witch says, "There is a price for this spell. You must give me your tongue." And then she says, "You know, stick out your little tongue and I shall cut it off." So the Little Mermaid is not only rendered in pain, in, you know, every step, like stepping on knives, but she's mute. Her very tongue is cut out, and so she cannot speak of her love. She cannot speak of her longing. And this, I think, is a sign of Hans Christian Andersen not being able to speak of his own love and his own longing and his desire to be something that he was not. In the end, the Little Mermaid, you know, her sisters come to her. The prince is marrying somebody else, and the Little Mermaid dances at his wedding, and every step felt like she was dancing on knives, but she danced so beautifully. No one had ever seen anyone dance like that. And then her sisters come to her and give her a knife and say, "The only way for you to regain your tail is to stab the prince to death." But the Little Mermaid cannot do it. She casts the knife away and she throws herself into the sea and she drowns. So she commits suicide.
It's just utterly horrific, isn't it?
And in the original version, the story ended there. But then Hans Christian Andersen couldn't bear such a tragic ending. And so he added just a little coda where, as she drowns, the spirits of the air lift up the Little Mermaid and they turn her into a ghost, into a spirit, and tell her that if she does 300 good deeds, one day she could have an immortal soul and go to heaven. Which I actually think is even sadder.
Yeah, it is. How have scholars interpreted his telling of it, aside from the fact that it is an expression of unrequited love on his behalf, potentially? Subsequently, of course, women have reinterpreted and thought about what this actually tells us about the nature of love and women in it.
Well, unsurprisingly, most feminist scholars see the story as being you know, both violent and misogynist. She sacrifices her voice and, in fact, her actual tongue. She sacrifices her mermaid tail, and then she sacrifices her life for the prince and for this unrequited love.
Mm.
This is obviously reinforces a cultural stereotype that subordinates women and makes, you know, the role of women one of passive self-sacrifice to serve the man. A leading Hans Christian Andersen scholar called Robert W. Mayers describes the cutting out of the Little Mermaid's tongue as the relinquishment of her right to be heard, the loss of her creativity, and the wound of castration. Very, very strong.
Do you have that sort of apocalyptic sense of this tale?
Well, I've always had an ambivalent feeling to this because on the one hand, I see it also as a story about love and the longing for love. And I also see it as a longing for immortality. And Hans Christian Andersen, who came from a very poor background, he was the son of a cobbler and an illiterate laundry maid. He longed for immortality, and his longing to be famous and to live on after his death was all poured into his stories. And so I can understand that longing for immortality, and I can understand the kind of mystic feeling behind the story. Other scholars interpret it as a story about a spiritual quest. The Little Mermaid moves from a creature of the sea to being a creature of earth to being a creature of the air.
Mm.
And she's therefore moving closer and closer and closer to God. And so it reflects a theme of a yearning to be at one with God. And Hans Christian Andersen, you know, he was a mystic, and he was very religious. And so I can see that aspect of the story.
Just incredible
as well.
Suffering along the way.
Mm.
And in fact, you've reworked aspects of The Little Mermaid, I think, in your latest novel, Dancing on Knives, haven't you?
Yes,
how
I have.
So,
you know, the title obviously comes from The Little Mermaid, and this sense that every step she took, it was as if her feet were being pierced by knives.
Mm.
What I've drawn upon is this sense of being out of place, not belonging in one's world, and this sense that living in this world can hurt you, can cause you pain. And I've also taken this kind of longing for love. So my novel doesn't have mermaids in it.
No, it doesn't.
No.
It's got, I think, Sarah's at the heart of it, a 20-something-year-old girl.
Yes. The book is set in Australia.
Woman, I should say.
She's. It's set on the south coast of New South Wales, and Sarah is an agoraphobic. She cannot leave the house. The world frightens her. The world hurts her. And it's a story about how she learns to have courage and to, you know, take the steps to leave the prison that she's made of herself and to speak. She finds her voice. And so my use of The Little Mermaid is purely through symbol and illusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very modern story set in a very modern day problems.
But a kind of another retelling in some sense, because it gives her the voice that was removed by the sea witch.
Absolutely.
Back there centuries ago.
Absolutely. Fairy tales are such a rich source of symbol and metaphor and archetype. You know, they're so wonderful to use in one's own work.
It's interesting then seeing that the Disney edition that became so popular, astronomically popular, had to have her getting the guy.
You know, I think I actually prefer Disney's version with the happy ending.
You romantic, you.
Yeah, I know, because I'm a romantic at heart. And, you know, I was always deeply grieved by the fact that Little Mermaid had to die and she didn't get her man. I perfectly understand why Disney retold that story in that way. And this, I think, is one of the interesting things that fairy tales do. You know, they can be retold to make a new story for a new generation.
Mm.
I think that most mothers would agree that they would rather have their daughters watching a show where the girl gets her voice and the girl gets her man than that she ends up committing suicide off the back of a ship.
True. True.
I think so.
But perhaps we learn more from the original telling of it.
Oh, I think it's good to know the original as well. I think that, you know, I certainly think that one should explore Hans Christian Andersen's stories, which are very, very powerful.
And very interesting to hear more about him and his personal life too. And that's the whole point of this series. Thank you so much for swinging by again. It's just such a treat.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be here.
And Kate Forsyth, now you also blogged on Sleeping Beauty, and I've link to that from our Facebook page. So, and you might do the same with this discussion
I shall
too.
Indeed.
So we'll link to Kate's website as part of our Fairy Tales Reimagined series. Thanks, Kate.
Thank you so much.
And Kate's her two latest books, Dancing on Knives for Adults, and Two Selkie Tales from Scotland, in fact, for children. Both, in some sense, drawing on the theme of today, The Little Mermaid.